welcome to the Minibank Gang podcast for Saturday, the 9th of March, 2013. I'm Tim Elliott, and I'm here with Graham Thickens.
Hello, Tim.
And we are not joined by the normal gang. Both Steve and Phil have some personal things to take care of, so our thoughts are with them as they do that, and they'll be back next week. But we're here at the Overnight Website Challenge, and I'd like to first introduce Mark Hurlburt from the Nerdery. We'll talk about kind of this year's incarnation, the 6th annual event. So, Mark?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for coming out, too, and participating. Good to have you back on the team this year.
Yeah, it's the fourth year. Yep. Fourth year that we're the Full Court WordPress team is back from the Minnesota, or the Minneapolis-St. Paul WordPress users group, which meets at the Nerdery every month.
Yes, so
Yeah, it's our way to repay you for
excellent.
Giving us monthly space.
Excellent. All it takes is a night of sleep. That's all we ask.
Well, and I think we've been covering for Minovate, we've been covering the event even longer than that. Going back, what year did you start it, Mark?
This is the sixth year here in Minnesota. So
We were here at the very first one. At least I was. Yeah.
I think you guys were. It's been we've definitely appreciated the attention over the years. It's definitely helped us get to where we're at now, which is in a position to really, you know, unfortunately, in some ways, having to turn people away from the event because we have so much interest in it, and we've kind of busted down all the doors that we can so far at this venue, at least. So we've capped out at 18. We're maybe getting to the point where we can consider some larger venues going forward, but the jump from this venue to the next larger venue starts to look a little bit more like
the convention center. Or
convention center, yeah. Right? So it gets, we need to get a lot of untapped interest before we can quite make that next leap.
Well, and I was going to say, as far as getting attention, you get all four TV stations out for this thing, which you actually have for a few years now. I think.
We've been very fortunate to get some good coverage. I think that it's. The world that we live in, people are usually looking for feel-good stories, typically, and it is definitely an event that I think provides that and kind of gives people a lot of excitement and a lot of interest. So we're very fortunate to get the publicity.
How many nonprofits applied this year? It has to be a big number, huh?
Well, there's a couple numbers that we look at there. The one that we usually look at and talk about is the number of people who kind of completed the application process. So, they sign up online, they go through, and they submit the paperwork to prove their 501c3 status, and then they also kind of encourage their people that they're working in their community, whether it's their volunteers or the people that they serve, to go out and do testimonials. So the people who jumped through all of those hoops, I believe this year it was 90-some, like 92 or 96. So, and then, from that, we have our team of judges that whittle that down to 18, a scant 18 that that actually make it here for the for the event, and really, those nonprofits are the ones that have already won. So, at this point, it's the competition for the teams and the bragging rights there, rather than actually the nonprofits. They're all hopefully walking away with a really great website.
So. Oh, I'm sure they will be.
So, how do the judges? Because you don't actually make the determinations.
Yes.
The judges are actually making those in who shows up here. Do they have, like, some criteria, or...?
Yeah, and that's really kind of one of the biggest changes that we're making this year. And, we've had kind of drifts and changes every year throughout the event. It hasn't been exactly the same any 2 years in a row, and a lot of that is us trying to just tinker with it to keep it interesting and everything, and a lot of it is kind of trying to really listen to the participants. We have, As with the Full Court Press team, a lot of teams that are back year after year after year, and we want to make sure that we are kind of hearing what you guys have to say about what could make the event better. And the judging, I think, has been one of the areas that over the years people have, been not disappointed in, but I think that it hasn't quite lived up to the potential that we thought the event could have. So we're providing a little more structure this year. Previous years, what we've done is the judges have gotten together and they basically just said, okay, well, by consensus, decide who won, which is great in that it's pretty fast relative to some other forms of judging that require tabulating and math and everything. Usually at the end of the event, after people have been up for 24 hours, they're not usually wanting to watch me tap dance as we are adding things up in a back room somewhere, which is what we did the first year too, which is pretty brutal. You've not seen a tough room until you've seen a row of people that haven't slept in 26 hours.
Yeah, right.
But But this year, we're adding a little more structure, and we're really changing the way that judging works, which is that we have the judges. They're going to be continuing to come. And this year, it's Judy Alness, who is the executive director of MAP for Nonprofits, Nina Gazelle, who is the nonprofit outreach and partnership coordinator for GiveMN, Adam Meyer, who is the creative director at Interval, and Joe Song, who's the tech director at Periscope. Those are our panel of judges, and they're the ones that actually did that whittling down from 90-some nonprofits down to 18. They'll be back in on Sunday morning doing conversations with all the teams, doing kind of an American Idol style, like they go into a room with them and they show off and they get a chance to ask a few questions and stuff. It's about 8 minutes that they get with the judges there. And then we're also asking this year that the teams and the nonprofit, each of them submit a written statement about the website. So that's like a 500-word thing. It's just kind of a, like, you know, tell us a little bit of the story of what happened, because it's hard to get the full story in 8 minutes, and we can't spend any more than that just because we have to start way too early for people to have a chance to actually show what they're doing. So we're submitting those two written things. We're also giving the judges more time. And the way that we're doing that is we're saying, you know what, we have some categories that we care about, and we're asking the judges to rank the sites this year on design and user experience, on functionality and kind of the programming, what does it do, and then impact, meaning, you know, what kind of difference is this going to make in the nonprofit's mission and their ability to do their jobs. And so we have a couple prompts in each of those categories to kind of ask them to rank out of 50 points, you know, how do you think this team did. One of the things that we are changing, though, that is real different is that we have a fourth category, too, that hasn't been part of the, you know, it hasn't really been part of the judging in an official sense over the previous years, because we've had the judging right at the event. And that is launch. We're really happy with the track record that the teams of the challenge have put out over the years. You know, there have been very, very few false starts or kind of things that didn't get off the ground eventually, but there have been, you know, a fair number of them that take longer than I think either the team or the nonprofit would want. So our goal this year is, rather than kind of let people have this really powerful, positive event and experience then, and then kind of go out the door and be like, yeah, we'll get back to that and kind of finish it up at some point, or, you know, we'll wait for the nonprofit to enter the content and then we'll kind of go back and forth on it. Sometimes all that stuff can add up. We're setting a deadline in the future. So while we're really excited and would love to have people finish tomorrow morning, which we usually have a couple people every year that actually do have it up and running and are live, we're asking that all of the teams try and complete by April 1st. We're going to be having an award ceremony April 2nd, where we'll be giving away awards for the best score in design and UX, the best score in functionality, the best score in community impact. We'll be doing a best in show, which is kind of the total score, including whether or not you launched, that'll come there. And then we also are doing another new thing this year, in that we're going to be posting a before and after gallery on the Overnight Website Challenge Facebook page and inviting the public to do a People's Choice Award. So we'll be kind of seeing what the industry says, and we'll know from then whether or not the judges got it right, I guess, to see what the industry agrees or not, and so ultimately who wins the popularity contest.
Right, so the People's Choice will also be awarded at the April 2nd event,
yes.
Right?
Yep, so it's they can get likes right up to the last second there, but that'll be the deadline.
Where will you do that event on the 2nd?
It's going to be at the Nerdery. Okay. So we're very fortunate in that one of our recent expansions, we installed what we call the Nerditorium, which is it's a 220-person amphitheater that we have that we use for company events and stuff like that. So while it's not big enough for us to fit the whole challenge in there, it is big enough for everybody to sit down and have a drink and have some appetizers and get to see some of the work. We're going to have six of the finalists will be presenting at that evening. So we'll get a chance to see a little bit more than we have previous years here, where we've had to pretty much limit to 3 or 4.
Sounds good.
Yeah. No, as a participant, I think that the changes are really good. And I think are an advancement. And I think what you want as a participant is not only to give a great website to a great cause, but also to get some level of, you know, notoriety for it.
Yeah.
And if you've done some really good work and you're not, you know, the top four, you kind of feel deflated at the end.
Yeah.
So I think coming out of this and then having another event where you have slept – yeah. normally is going to be a really good thing. But
yeah, and we're really hopeful to be able to get some good information. I mean, I think that, you know, we're excited to have a networking hour at that event where we can have before and afters of all the sites showing and everything, so that people can get to see. You know, like it's amazing. You know, I'm in a rarefied position at the challenge, and then I get to walk around the whole time and just see what everybody's doing and look over people's shoulders. When you're on the team, you know, you're pretty much heads down and you're working that whole time, and 24 hours go by and you're intimately familiar with the team that you're working with, but you know, there you don't get a chance to see any of the other cool work that's being done in the room a lot of times.
Right.
So
yeah,
we're hoping to be able to change that a little bit with these modifications. And if people don't like it, we'll figure something else out and try something else new
okay.
next year. So.
Well, we'll give you the feedback.
Excellent. So yes, please do.
So as we've done every year, we also talk with the nonprofit that the team that I'm involved with, the Full Court Press team, was given this year. So I'd like to introduce Ron Lischield and Bill Ernst from the Motorcycle Dial-A-Ride. So I don't know, I guess, Ron, do you want to talk a little bit about your organization?
I'll start, yeah. Once again, our organization wants to thank the Nerdery and Full Court Press for volunteering to work with us and giving us the opportunity. We're a nonprofit that's been around for about 22 years. We're starting our 23rd. And our mission is to prevent impaired motorcyclists from making the mistake of getting on a motorcycle and riding home when they shouldn't. And that's different than trying to accomplish the same thing with somebody on four wheels, because in most cases, if you're out drinking and you've had too much to drink, realize I shouldn't drive home tonight, most people would think nothing of leaving a car parked in a parking lot, locking it up, coming, taking a cab home, having somebody pick them up, and then coming back the next day to pick up their car. But I can almost guarantee that there isn't a motorcyclist in the world that will leave their motorcycle sitting in a strange parking lot overnight, because they know that when they come back in the morning, either the frame is going to be the only thing left, or the bike will be completely gone and they'll never see it again. So the challenge in getting somebody to change their behavior on a motorcycle is that we have to provide a way that we can get the motorcycle home as well, or an option for the motorcycle. And so with our program, we are available from the last weekend of April to the last weekend of October. So we cover 26 of the 52 weeks of the year. We start accepting phone calls at 6 p.m. on Friday night, and we go until bars close on Sundays. Hmm. And we also provide service on the legal holidays of Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day, since they could fall on a non-weekend date.
Is your service area just in the Twin Cities?
Entire state of Minnesota.
Wow. That's a challenge.
It's a free service. Nobody gets charged anything. The bar that makes a call, the person we pick up and take home, nobody pays anything. We don't want to put any roadblocks in it. And we don't want anybody to say, well, we have a 1-800 number. We don't want somebody to say, well, I'm up in Duluth and I can't make the call because it's a long distance call. We don't want people to say we can't make the pickup, you know, for whatever reason. And so the volunteer that we have a volunteer board member typically that answers or that carries the phone on the weekend, and we receive a call. We locate where the person is. We find the closest volunteer, and that volunteer goes out with a vehicle and a trailer, and they pick up the motorcyclist, their passenger, and we load the motorcycle on the trailer if necessary, and we say we're going to take them home. That's a little incorrect. We'll take them to a place of safety for the night. If they're in Mankato and they live in Duluth, we're not going to drive them home to Duluth, but we'll take them to a motel. We'll take them to a friend's house or something so they don't have to ride home. We also provide a ride in some cases just for the passenger. It may be that the rider of the motorcycle hasn't had anything to drink or is, you know, fine to drive, but their passenger may be somebody that isn't able to safely, you know, operate as a passenger. So we've had cases where we simply set a car out. Passenger sits in the front seat. We follow the motorcycle home, drop the passenger off, say goodnight, have a good night, and drive away. And we average about 25 pickups a year that we know of. one of the things we hope the new website will do will be to increase the ability to track not only pickups but also interventions. Interventions right now, we have almost no way of tracking those.
So can you define what you mean by when you say interventions? Is that just people talking about your service?
It's kind of our mission is kind of a three-step process. Our first goal is to educate everybody about the consequences of drinking and riding, or riding while impaired. The second thing is that we also like to have people be responsible for their own actions. So if I'm going out drinking tonight with some friends, I can make the option of whether or not I take a motorcycle or a vehicle, a car or a truck. I can make the decision whether or not I'm going to take a designated driver along. I can make plans that we're going to be drinking at this location and across the street's a motel, and we're going to check into the motel for the night. We also want friends, people in the bar, the employees of the bar, the owner of the bar, restaurant, to be making intelligent decisions all night long. Maybe we need to slow this person up, cut them off if need to, and then try and do some sort of intervention on site before we have to make that phone call. Is there a way that we can get you and your motorcycle home? Tom says that he can drive your motorcycle if you give him permission. Bill says that you and your wife can get in the car. Tom will drive your motorcycle home. Bill will follow in his car, drop both of you and your motorcycle off, and then they'll get a ride back to the bar and start over again. So that's the intervention part. If we actually have to receive a phone call and dispatch a volunteer with a trailer, that's really an admission of failure for the first two steps. Hmm. But that's our mission, and that's what we're empowered to do, is to go out and make those pickups to prevent people from making that decision and riding when they shouldn't. And, I say we do 25 pickups a year. Some people will say, well, you got 400,000 motorcyclists with an endorsement, you got 250,000 motorcycles, you've got 78 or 80 days a year that you can potentially be doing a pickup, and you can only come up with 25. Is that program really successful? Well, I would say if you save one life, it's successful. Mm-hmm. If we save 25 a year, that's successful. You look at the room we've got here with 200 and some people. Well, in 10 years, is 250 a big number? I don't know. If you walked into that room and there wasn't anybody there, would that be a big number? Yeah, it's a big number. And so, our goal is to try and prevent people from making mistakes and eliminate all the roadblocks why they would possibly make a bad decision.
Right. So one of our challenges as a team is to try to take your needs and then translate it into a website. And we've decided at the beginning, we're recording here at lunchtime, the first day, so we're only 3-4 hours into this, but we've decided to design from the mobiles first, so that people in the bar on their mobile phones will have access. They can, let you know or log their intervention, that kind of thing. So you'll be able to have a lot more notice of your mission, and hopefully we'll be able to make this available so that more and more people across the state really know about you and know about how to get your services.
Currently, I would classify our website as a brochure.
And a lot of nonprofits,
it's an electronic brochure. It's a read-only, and in most cases a read-once website. Mm-hmm. They go there, they read it. Okay, I know about it. But there's never any reason for them to go back. And so we want to make it be an interactive website that, in order for people to do various things with us, the only way or the easiest way for them to do it is to come to our website. If we have a volunteer distributing materials at a bar in a particular area, we want them to be able to go to the website and indicate where those materials were distributed. If somebody does an intervention, we want them to be able to go to our website and report the intervention. If a bar isn't currently one of the places that has our materials, we want them to be able to go to the website and say, hey, don't forget about us. We're up here in Black Duck, Minnesota, but we have motorcycles come in and we'd like to get involved in your program. you know, get a volunteer in touch with us, drop off some materials. We'd be happy to support the program. We'd like to be able to have people know where our trailers are located, what areas we can easily cover, which areas we kind of got some black holes that somebody might say, well, I live in this area and I don't see any trailers around, but hey, you know, I've got my own trailer. I'd be happy to become a volunteer and, you know, let you use my trailer if you, you know, if you go to a pickup in my area. So we want to be, have it be more interactive. And then the other thing, like every nonprofit, money.
Donations,
the ability to donate money to us. Right now you go to our website and it says, yes, you can donate money. Fill out a check to Dial a Ride. Here's the address to mail it to. Put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it. And as soon as they click off the website, the chances are they're probably not going to write the check. They're not going to put it in the envelope. We're not going to get it. So the ability to be able to go on and use something like GiveMN and just click on it. I want to donate $10 or $50, and here's my credit card information. Or, you know, I'd like to give you $5 a month for the year, and, you know, have that option or whatever. Yeah. So that we can,
I guarantee it will fix it.
So we can buy, so we can buy more trailers. So we can, you know, get more promotional materials and those kinds of things.
Right. So if we're successful in building this site, which, you know, will increase your awareness and increase the amount of times that people call you, your organization will grow as far as more volunteers. You'll be able to service more people.
And it'll also give us the ability to be able to use our limited volunteer time to do more productive things rather than data input and those,
right,
you know, maintaining web or databases and those kinds of things. Those things will be done automatically behind the scenes at the website, and those reports will be available to us, or those databases will be available to us, but we don't have to physically sit down and keystroke in every, you know, name, address, phone number for, you know, 500 bars, 500 volunteers, and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, we're really happy to be able to be working with you, and we'll do our best over the next 18 or so hours, however much time Mark says we have left. So thanks for being here. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Did you want anything from?
I don't know, Bill. Do you have anything to say?
I got a question for Bill. How many volunteers do you now have around the state, and what's your objective for the coming year?
You know, I guess I don't really know the actual. I mean, about 500.
Wow.
You know, and it's to me, it's the more we can get, the better, because, you know, it's, I mean, to me now, the nerdery and, you know, Tim and Full Court Press have basically become volunteers, because what they're doing is going to help save lives. I mean, yeah, they've all become lifesavers themselves, with probably, yeah, really not being aware of that. And, you know, I think we have volunteers we don't know about. I mean, we have people that have probably sat in a bar and have talk somebody down from riding that bike home, and it's not just bikes, cars probably as well. And I the more people we can reach to do that. So I mean, I think we may have a count on volunteers, but I think there's a lot more out there than we're aware of.
Oh, I imagine there is, and plus all the bars that are obviously know about you already, and you want to keep increasing those numbers.
There's 400 liquor license holders that serve on site in Minnesota. We're in about 500, so we've got room to grow there. The other thing that that's important to us is, you know, the kind of the definition of what's an impaired rider. Most people would think that it's, you know, something to do with alcohol or drugs, but there's a lot of other reasons that a person could be considered impaired.
And like what?
Well, you're diabetic.
Yeah.
You leave your home at 7 o'clock in the morning. You ride for 4 hours, you get to a destination, you've had nothing to eat, nothing to drink, all of a sudden your blood sugar's out of whack. You might be sunburned, you might be dehydrated, you may have broken your glasses, lost a contact lens, got stung by a bee. I mean, there's any sort of number of reasons why.
You may be sleep deprived.
Yeah.
Right.
And so there's a lot of other reasons why, and you know, we're here to pick up impaired motorcycles. It doesn't make any difference if the end result is we're preventing somebody from going down on a bicycle and being injured, or a motorcycle and being injured or killed. For whatever reason, we don't want to have people feel that they shouldn't call us. Oh, I can't call because I've got a medical emergency. I'm not drunk, so we want to help expand that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
All right. Well, we'll get back at it then.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming, guys, and to our podcast.
Thanks for having us.
So, Graham, you've been hanging around for a couple of hours, and you've had a chance to visit with some other people. Who did you talk to?
Yeah, I had a chance to, soon after I arrived, I had a chance to do an interview with Bill McLeslie, who's the head of IP House, which is one of the sponsors of the event and does all the hosting for the nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And that was fascinating. I did about a six or seven minute interview with him that we can attach to the post today.
Yep.
He kind of updated me with how it works with all the tools and the hosting and how they interview each team captain and that sort of thing. And what I did learn from him is that Nerdery does this overnight website challenge in Chicago, too.
They do.
They've done two of them the last couple of years, and IP House was involved in sponsorship of that as well. Mm-hmm.
So I think I'll just cut it right in right now, that interview.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Why don't we do that?
Hey, this is Graham, and I'm at the Overnight Website Challenge again. This has got to be my sixth year or something like that. And we're over at the St. Paul campus of the U of M, right across the street from the cow barns, and having a good old time in here with a whole bunch of teams that are going to be helping nonprofits create new websites. So, but I'm sitting here with Bill McLeslie, who is a sponsor of the event from IP House, and you, Bill, handle all the hosting, right?
We do. We handle the hosting. We're providing hosting for all the nonprofits, giving them a free year of hosting after the event. And then we're giving the development teams the tools they need to actually create the websites for the nonprofits.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that. What is that?
Well, most of the nonprofits are looking for a very affordable hosting solution, and we can offer them that. But the tools needed for developers don't necessarily fit into that category, if you understand what I'm saying, is that they need to have a little bit more robust hosting. So what we've developed is we've given each of the hosting teams their own dedicated server with the access they need to actually do whatever they need to do. With that said, what they're doing is they're going in, they're putting in their CMS systems, they're putting in their special code, they're putting these sites together, then they're actually deploying the sites for the nonprofits. Once that's done, the nonprofit can either keep this dedicated environment or they can go to our cost-effective hosted solutions.
Sure. So the developers and designers that are part of these teams are obviously quite familiar with the tools.
Right.
Did you go about choosing the tools? Are they just all really the standard?
No, it's not standard. No, there's an interview process that we do with each of the team captains.
Oh, there is?
Yeah,
we ask them
a specific set of questions about what they're looking to do. What are they, you know, if they're comfortable developing in the Windows environment, or if they're, you know, if they're a Drupal shop or a WordPress shop. So then we say, okay, that's what you need. Now, what about these additional components for WordPress?
So you like almost customize for each team. Oh, my gosh.
And that's what IP House is really good at. We're a customized hosting provider. There's lots and lots and lots of commodity providers out there, but
right.
That's not what these nonprofits need. And it's not what developers need. They need, you know, usually developers develop in their own space, and then they try to find somebody that fits.
Yeah.
So they make this beautiful painting, and then they have to cram it into some kind of frame. And that doesn't necessarily work.
No.
So we're saying, well, let's give you a custom frame or framework, and then you put your development inside that custom framework.
Beautiful.
So that's what we do. And
literally sat down with each of the team captains.
We've gone.
How many teams are there?
There's 18 teams.
Wow,
and
that's a lot.
And some of the teams already, well, actually, coincidentally, one of the teams is a customer of ours, so they're just saying, no, don't worry about us. We're just going to use your stuff already.
Yeah.
And for those teams that are not using us now, and a lot of the teams are actually groups of programmers from the Nerdery themselves.
Oh, sure.
They come to us and they say, yeah, we're looking for this. We say, okay, great, we'll give you
sure.
X. We're here today on site to actually help them if they have any additional questions.
So Nerdery is a customer of yours?
No, Nerdery is not a customer
of ours.
No, because they do development. They work with us for, we have shared customers. They do development for a customer, we have a customer called Graphic Systems. They're a large scale print shop. They print 12 feet wide by infinity length.
Sure.
They came to the Nerdery and said, hey, well, actually, they came to us and said, we're looking for development. I'm like, well, here's a list of people to used. Nerdery is one of them. They went to the nerdery. They had a site developed. And then the nerdery comes back to us and says, hey, we want to make this site hosted for your customers. So there's a partnership.
Yeah, there's a connection.
That's why we sponsor this event. We sponsor this event, number one, to help nonprofits. But number two is because developers need partners once they develop content.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to do.
Is this your first year sponsoring?
This is our first year sponsoring. We sponsored the Chicago Fall of 2012, and that was really great. That was wonderful.
What was that?
The Nerdery Chicago.
Oh, I wasn't even aware of that.
Oh, yeah, the Nerdery has a branch in Chicago.
I knew that. Yeah.
And they've had two challenges down there.
I didn't even know they were doing them down there. That's very cool. I need to get up to speed on this.
Well, they had a challenge down there, not as large as this one.
Oh, no.
And we sponsored that one, and they liked how we worked with the teams, and they're like, yeah, we want to work with you guys this on this one.
Did they do the one in Chicago just the first time this last fall, or have they done it two years running, maybe?
I thought it was the first time this fall, last fall, 2012, but I think they may have actually had more than one.
And of course, their office down there is much smaller than in the Twin Cities. I mean, they only have, 20 or 30 people down there.
I think 30 people. Yeah. I mean, it's a two-story space, but it's an open floor plan, and they're working as hard as they can. I think one of the reasons they expanded that space, but you should convert this to them, is they're hiring as people as fast as they can, and if they got work, they could use some people in other locations to do that work. So that was Chicago was a great expansion.
Sure. Did you have any connections down in Chicago previous to this, like other customers?
We have customers in Chicago.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay. You have a pretty wide reach. You're certainly not just Minnesota, though.
No, we help people in the UK. We help people.
Really?
Yeah. We help people across the country, and sometimes it makes sense to host stuff here. If you're hosting, the geographic component is irrelevant.
Yeah.
You can host anywhere. It doesn't matter.
Yep. Yep.
So really it comes down to maybe it's a cost or there's some other component. We help a lot of companies out of the UK because it's cheaper to host here than it is to host in the UK.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So how many people are involved in IP House now?
We are 10 full-time employees. And
how many?
10.
Oh, okay.
And really it's just myself and another guy doing sales, and I got basically 8 engineers.
Yeah, and you work out of your, is it a farm in Stillwater?
Oh, no, no. I wish I worked out of my farm. No, no.
Do you still have the farm?
I do. Oh. I do.
What is it with you hosting guys and farms? I mean, Mike O'Connor, the old GoFast guy, he's long retired.
He just likes to get on his tractor and mow the grass.
Right, over in Wisconsin. Right.
I'm about 10 miles north of Stillwater, and we've got chickens and horses and goats and llamas and all that
stuff. But you guys have, like, real offices somewhere, too, then.
Well, that's because, we get in the manure all day long, and we want to go at night and go get on the computer. So
where do you hang out most of the time, then? Where's your
We're downtown Minneapolis.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, we've got a 10,000-square-foot data center downtown Minneapolis.
Yes. Whereabouts is that exactly?
We're on the corner of 2nd Avenue and 4th Street.
Okay.
It's the building called the Tritech Building. And, it's a pretty large carrier hotel.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's why you're there.
511, but that's why we're there, yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool, Bill. I could talk to you all day long, but I suppose we should wrap it up. We're coming up to 7 minutes here, and you've got to run. Well, I'm going to shoot a picture of you, and I'll get this posted. So great talking to you.
Oh, wonderful.
So who else did you get to talk to?
I had a good chance to chat with Mark Malmberg, the VP of Communications, and he introduced me to Mike Durheim, who I don't believe I'd met before, the CEO, one of the original three founders. Had a real nice chat with him, and I learned that Nerdery is now 450 or 470 some employees. I also learned they have an office in Kansas City now with about 10 people there. I had no idea.
Yeah, they're really expanding.
Yeah, Chicago's up to 45 people. And things are good. I chatted a little bit with Mark prior about, when they had to do the cutback recently, and that was sort of painful for them. But everything's cool. They're always, hiring more developers all the time. They're constantly in recruiting mode to find, more developers. So, they had that adjustment they made in the workforce. He said it was about billable versus non-billable, hours, and they were just getting out of whack there a little bit, I guess. And,
well, let's listen to that.
To what?
To your interview.
I didn't interview him.
Oh, that's
I just chatted with him, yeah. Well, it was just a hallway kind of a thing, and it was right before Mark asked me to sit down with the Nerdcast guy, and I did an interview.
I have a picture. I'm going to put that on Twitter.
Yeah, so with Ryan Carlson is the technology evangelist at Nerdery now. He's been there, I don't know, I think he said 6 or 8 months. And he's a very experienced podcaster. He's been doing it for years. I forget who he said he worked for before, but what he does on the side, besides his own personal broadcast, is he writes for Wired, for Geek Dad.
Wow.
And I said, you know, I read one of your pieces recently, and I wondered, who is this guy at Nerdery that's writing for Wired? And here he is, and sat me down at his Ustream setup, quite a sophisticated setup. Did you see all his mics and everything?
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
And they are live streaming the whole thing. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I made it onto the Nerdcast, and I'm not even a nerd.
Well, you sort
I just pretend to be.
You're like an honorary nerd.
Yeah, an honorary nerd. I was telling him and some of the others, I said, you know, I don't even build WordPress sites. I said, all my Minovate colleagues do, but I was telling Mark Malmberg, he said, all I do is I enter stuff into WordPress. That's it. You know?
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, I'm the same way. But I said, well, yeah, there's sure a lot of talent here that on the WordPress side of things. And I told him maybe I'll even get over to one of the WordPress events that are held at the Nerdery, what, every month, right?
Yep. Third Thursday, usually.
Yep. That place sounds like it's grown quite a bit since I was last year. I mean, with the expansion, and they've got this auditorium now and everything.
Yeah,
is that where they do
that's
the
where we
WordPress?
Have our WordPress
okay.
Space, yeah.
What do they call it? The Nerditorium?
Nerditorium, yeah. It's quite well done.
Yeah. Well, it's quite an organization. And, I mean, and even the CEO is here, and he told me some of the other salespeople that I know are going to be by later. And, you know, and somehow they time it so... So all the TV stations can actually show up here. Not at the same time, though. They don't want the competitors here at the same time.
Right.
So I'm sure that Mark Malmberg and Mark Hurlbert, who's involved in the PR stuff, too, I'm sure they plan it so they can get Channel 11 here at one time. I think they were here this morning when I showed up.
Right.
When I walked in, there's this huge tower out there. Did you see that big like white van?
The satellite truck. Yeah.
Yeah, the satellite truck was, and I thought, whoa, didn't say Channel 11 on it, but I guess that's who it was. I learned later.
Yeah.
And they get them all out here, Channel 4, Channel 5, and
yeah, at the beginning of the announcement at the beginning of the challenge, Senator Franken had a
recorded message,
which was quite nice, quite funny actually as well.
Did he have a joke or two in there?
He did. He said that originally with the Nerdery, they had set up to actually have him appear as a hologram, but because of the sequester, they had to shut that down. So he was forced to only send a videotape. So.
Oh, that's so funny.
So I'll have a link in the show notes to his to the video, which is now on YouTube. It's worth a look. It's only 3 or 4 minutes long.
Sure. Cool.
And Senator Klobuchar is going to do one tomorrow, apparently.
Ah. Nice, yeah. But not in person.
I don't.
She would not like the smell of that room.
I think she's also contributed a video, which is nice. You remember when Senator Franken was here a couple of years ago?
I probably wasn't here when that.
Oh, you weren't.
Where he actually showed up.
He actually was here. Yeah, Steven and Phil. I guess you were out that day.
Yeah,
but yeah, a couple of years ago, he actually came and met with all of us and shook our hand and. Had a few words to say. So
well, I've met him too, and when I met him, I told him that early in my career, his father called on me. His father was a printing salesman, and he turns to his wife. I forget her name. And he said, "Hey, come over here. This guy knew my dad." I said, "Yeah, I bought printing from your dad. You know, I helped you get through Blake School because I supported the, you know, whatever."
Yeah. So aside from the overnight website challenge, what other things have you been up to this week?
Well, I attended an event for the first time that's not really a tech event, but it was called Allied Executives at the Convention Center, and it's an organization that kind of helps CEOs network with one another, kind of support CEO support group kind of thing. Huh. And this thing drew 1,000 people. I guess they've been doing it for a few years. And they had several speakers. They had the CEO of Lifetime Fitness. They had David Olson from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. and several other really good speakers, head of Bremer Bank, and one of my clients, Revenue Rocket Consulting Group, which works with IT services firms, mm-hmm. management consulting group. He gave a talk about what's hot in tech and what isn't, and you know, and of course the famous line is anything with ass in it. That's hot.
That's hot.
AAS. I mean, not Google Ass. I know we've been touching on Google Ass, courtesy of Conan O'Brien, but no, he's talking about like software as a service, platform as a service, blah blah blah. So that was good, and they had exhibitors set up afterwards and a reception afterwards, and I met a few interesting people. Other than that, I think my week was no other events. I stopped into Cocoa. Met with a Minneapolis entrepreneur who went out to San Francisco a few years ago, who's a real interesting guy that I'm going to post about, who's got an outfit called Punch Through Design and doing a lot of really cool hardware design stuff now in San Francisco. But he was back here to interview somebody, and I was able to do a, not an audio interview with him, but just a sit-down chat kind of thing. And so, yeah, so I was in Cocoa at least one day this week, as I try to do. And then we've got some more stuff coming up for next week. You've got the list of events, one of which I don't think is on our, I'm not sure it was on our thing last week, our show notes, the Entrepreneur Showcase that Thai Minnesota is involved with. That's coming up on the 21st.
Yeah, we'll have to add that to the list. But the 21st is a packed day of events.
That's because of the
not only that, but Mobile March, which of course Phil is still madly getting ready to.
So the Entrepreneur Showcase will be right after Mobile March.
Okay.
Mobile March is up at the Earl Brown Center up in Brooklyn Center, I guess that is.
Yep.
And then the startup showcase is at the Boy Scout Base Camp at Fort Snelling, which is quite an event building center thing. And that, I'm sure, is going to have a large part of our local startup community, new startups that are going to have, like, tables set up and so forth, and a lot of investors and service providers will be attending that as well.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Tech Fuse is at the convention center the same day, the 21st.
Oh, yeah.
Mini Bar is coming up April 6th.
Yes, Saturday, and we yet to hear, have heard about what, I mean, I don't think they put out the announcement yet for people to sign up for sessions.
No, I haven't
seen
that yet.
It's going to be a mad dash, as it often is with that, for people to pitch, you know, what they want to talk about. And then, of course, the sign-ups for attendees, that probably wouldn't start till mid-March or so.
Mm-hmm.
But that's next week, so, you know.
Yeah.
We'll be hearing a lot about, but, you know, I figure the people that volunteer to run Mini Bar and Mini Demo, Ben Edwards and Adrian, his assistant. Ben's a little busy with smart things these days.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I can understand why Minibar would be a little bit behind. And of course,
and to tease a little bit for next week, Steve Borsch did pick up his smart thing. So
last night
he'll have a full review for us on the show next time.
Well, and he's already posted about it.
He posted on
Minobay last night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he's Johnny on the spot.
Yeah.
So I'll link to that post.
He was one of the first couple of dozen that were invited to come pick up their kits, and they must have done that at Smart Things Minneapolis headquarters last night down at the above the Bulldog in Northeast. I assume is where they did it.
Right.
But people can read the post.
Right, and I'm sure he'll have some more experience with it.
Oh, heavens, he'll have his whole house wired by next week. Are you
right,
kidding?
Right. Coming end of April, MHTA Spring Conference coming up at the Convention Center.
Yep.
And then way off in June is the I.O. Festival at the Walker. So
right, and that event's probably already sold out. But for you lucky ones that got in.
Yeah, that was pretty pricey, though, to sign up for
it. It is, and it draws from all over the country, and it's really about design more than anything else, mm-hmm. but which is why it's at a place like the Walker, and so, yeah, that'll be a good one. I don't know that we'll be able to cover that as I recall, my request for a press pass went into a black hole or something because I haven't heard anything back. But
well, maybe they'll surprise you.
We'll
maybe
get
they're
there.
Listeners. And
we'll get
say,
there if we can.
You know what? Graham Thickens needs to be there.
By golly, yep, yep. Robert Stevens told me I should go to that event. He said when he was in Minnesota, he thought it was the best event in Minnesota, really, as far as the quality of the people it attracts. So it's, you know, it's a different world than just pure tech, obviously, but it's a biggie. But we will be at the High Tech Association spring event, of course, as we always are, and that'll be a good one at the end of April. So.
All right. Well, yeah. Thanks for coming out for the on-location recording.
Yes.
And we'll get the rest of the gang together next week.
You bet. On the
Minivate Gang Podcast.
You betcha. Over and out, people. Have a great week.
See ya.